tonight, last week we talked some about calling, and we talked about ways we sometimes are called, and somehow we don't always experience the same call as other people do. Oftentimes our call is much different, and yet it is no less a legitimate call than something that happens to a person like the Apostle Paul. A lot of it is in how we look at it and how we react it or accept it or not. Tonight I want to talk, and we looked at some examples, including Jesus, Moses, Abraham, some others as well. This evening I want to talk a little bit about and maybe have some dialogue about theological understandings of call. How we are called theologically, how we respond, and what all of that means as far as gifts and our responsibilities. Theology, of course, has to do with theos, God. Theology comes from two Greek words, theos, God, logos, word, or teachings. So it's words about or teachings about God and our understanding with God. When we listen to that call to be set apart, we find specific things in those calls from God theologically. First of all, there's an invitation to participate in the blessing of redemption. We talked about that a little bit last week. We are all called as Christians. God issues a call to everybody. It's up to us to accept or not, unless you're one of our Calvinistic friends who then think you don't have a choice. But for we who are Baptists in general, and historically, although there are some Calvinistic strains within Baptist life, we do have a choice in all of that, to choose to accept the redemption or not. And when we do, what's really interesting is, I don't know if you noticed the word I used a few moments ago, but it is an invitation to participate in the blessing. It's not just to accept it and sit back, but to participate. And that's what part of calling and giftedness is about, is to participate with God in the world, to recognize that responsibility. Of course, a calling by God to all Christians is an invitation to enter into the kingdom of God, but not just off at the pearly gates, but right now. Which once again feeds into this whole thing of called and gifted. We are each given some kind of gift from God or talent from God. And part of that acceptance of the call is then to use that particular talent for the kingdom. We're called into fellowship with Christ, into peace of Christ, into freedom with Christ. At least we Baptists hold to that. We're called into freedom. Christ has set you free, the biblical text says. And it's not just what Paul says in Galatians, therefore, though, do not use your freedom as license. It's responsible freedom. Once again, in fellowship with Christ. We are called to work for Christ and others, that is, to help share the grace and love of Christ in those ways which we can, using the gifts with which we have been gifted. Oftentimes, when we think of spiritual gifts, though, the first place we think of going in the Bible is where? Spiritual gifts. Corinthians. That's right, Jane. Corinthians. And more specifically, 1 Corinthians chapter 12. Where we find a listing of some gifts. To one is given through the Spirit the utterance of wisdom, to another the utterance of knowledge according to the same Spirit, to another faith by the same Spirit, to another gifts of healing by the one Spirit, to another the working of miracles, to another prophecy, to another the ability to distinguish between spirits, to another various kinds of tongues, to another the interpretation of tongues. All these are inspired by one and the same Spirit who apportions to each one individually as He wills. And we say, well, you know, I don't have the gift of prophecy, I don't have the gift of healing, although Betty does. Sarah did and does. Now, how's that so? They had a capacity for nursing. You know, others have different capacities for doing those kinds of things. We have other kinds of gifts then that we find there and that we think about as far as being given, and lists of gifts. When we go to Romans chapter 12, we find body image about being given grace and being given gifts, and that we use those with zeal, etc. For example, in chapter 12 of Romans, starting in verse 6, having gifts that differ according to the grace given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, in proportion to our faith. If service, in serving. He who teaches, in teaching. He who exhorts, in exhortation. That one who contributes, in liberality. The one who gives aid, with zeal. He who does acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. And so we see, but notice there's a slight difference in some of these lists here. In 1 Corinthians, we think of things like speaking in tongues, interpreting tongues, healing, prophecy, all those kinds of things. The only one that's the same out of the two lists is prophecies mentioned in both. But in Romans chapter 12, we find other things. If service, then in the way we serve. In teaching, the way we teach. In exhorting, the way we exhort, that is, plead with people for the faith. In contributing, with liberality. Giving aid, with zeal. Doing acts of mercy, with cheerfulness. A slightly different list from what we find in 1 Corinthians. And guess what? There are a lot of folks who can do those kinds of things with compassion and zeal and cheerfulness and mercy. But do we often think of them as spiritual gifts? No. Most people don't. Most people, when you think of spiritual gifts, say, oh, well, they're here. And while that is a listing of some, it might be better to think of being gifted instead of identifying a particular area or a particular gift. It might be better to look at these lists as examples, which are the result of a different way of thinking about spiritual life. It's not that you're given the gift of teaching, but the way you think about spiritual life and how you approach that, the teaching is the result of that spirituality that you have. It's not so much that God said, okay, well, we got a bucket here, let's dump this teaching on this one, or let's dump this one on this one, or like Tim Conway was told by Don Knotts in that Oscar-winning movie, yeah, right, The Apple Dumpling Gang, when God poured in your brains, he used a teaspoon and his hand shook. You know, it's not so much that God's dumping these things out as perhaps the way we think of the gifts or talents or capacities which we have. A capacity or a talent that we might have that we don't use in relationship to the church and the kingdom of God may result in something different from if we are a person who has that talent or gift, that capability, and we think about it in terms of something that God gave to us and that God expects us to cultivate and use, and then therefore we use it for the good of the whole, the good of the church, the good of the world. Why? Because of our connection with God. That can make all the difference in the world as to whether it's simply a gift or a talent or a capability. It could. James indicates that just doing good works isn't good enough. It needs to have some connection with God. We most often think of a gift as a special talent, right? People say, boy, she's got a real gift for making people feel at ease. Or, you ever had, you know, their child's in the gifted and talented program. But this whole idea of it being, you know, whether it's simply a talent or whether it is a gift with spiritual connections is not something just for today. It actually has ancient origins. Because people used to think that anybody that had a special talent or a special capability must have gotten it from one of the gods. In fact, some people who had a tremendous memory, were highly prized in the ancient world, especially for philosophers and other teachers, because they would then sit there and memorize and be able to later record or parrot to other people what this philosopher said. They didn't have to sit there and take shorthand. And it was believed, especially if that philosopher followed a particular god or goddess, then it was believed that this person was given that talent by this god or goddess in order to help this philosopher that had been given the ability to philosophize, to think all of these wonderful thoughts. So there are ancient origins to special talents being thought of as blessings given by the gods that only some people have. The idea that we all receive gifts is not something that is found in most ancient religion, most ancient philosophies. Not everybody gets the gift. But Paul speaks about gifts and uses language from his time to communicate and understand that we are given charisma. Sometimes the word charismata, but charisma means gift. I said last week as we were closing, everybody that's a Christian is a charismatic. Because the word charisma, while we have certain other connotations to it, the word charisma is translated gift. And God gives each one of us gifts, at least one, in addition to the gift of grace and redemption. God gives us other gifts then that we are to discover and cultivate and use in furthering the kingdom of God and the causes of God. When Paul speaks of this charisma or charismata, as he sometimes uses that word, it implies that the quality of the gift is not because we want it and we took it, but because somebody else gave it to us to use. God never gives a gift without the expectation that we will use it with responsibility. And that's throughout the biblical text. Abraham is given blessings, not so that Abraham can feel good about himself, but so that Abraham can provide for his people and can share the good news of God around with others with whom he comes in contact. He doesn't always do that. He says, well, Sarah's my sister, so that Pharaoh's men won't decide that she's a fox at 65 years old and he's an old geezer at 75 and they kill him and take her. But gifts are given to be used, to be cultivated, and to be used. A second implication in the Bible is that if you have a gift, that use is to be faithful. We are to be faithful in using our gifts or our talents. God's gifts have a purpose. God doesn't just toss them out there, scattering them along the ground just for anything. God's gifts have a purpose, and we need to use them appropriately. And perhaps we need to think about it in this light or similarity. If you are a donor, Ed, you choose a charity to give money to. When you give it, what do you expect? Not a tax write-off. What do you expect them to do with it?
I expect
I
look for low overhead.
Now you look for low overhead and you expect them to use that money. You don't expect them to stick it back and wait 5 years, right? You don't expect them to stick it back and wait 5 years before they do anything with it. No, you expect them to use it and to use it appropriately. Well, if we do that, or Carrie, you're a child, you get a gun from your dad. That could be scary. No, but you get a gun from your dad. He not only gives it to you so that you will use it.
I go to Ed's before he gets a chance to go to charity.
Okay, go to Ed's before he gets a chance to go to charity. But he gives you a gun. Not only does he expect you to be able to use that, that's why he gave it to you, because he knows you want to, but how does he expect you to use it? Responsibly. You're to use it and use it responsibly and appropriately. You're to use it for the purpose for which it is meant. He gives it to you so you can go out and hunt birds and four-legged animals. So you use it appropriately. You go out and use it on a two-legged animal, a human being. That's inappropriate. So, you know, we give gifts to organizations or to children or to other folks that we know and want to give them a gift, and we expect it to be used. While we want it to bring them pleasure, we also expect it to be used appropriately and within the purpose for which it was given, especially when we make donations to organizations. Is it any different with God? No. God gives us those gifts to be used within the purpose for which God gave them. And to be used. Not just to be sat back and stored away somewhere. But to be used. That was part of the, you know, you can go back to the parable of the talents. And this one was given 10, this one was given 5, this one was given 1. And the 10 and the 5 used them appropriately and multiplied them, and that's what their boss, who was really rather harsh, I mean, he was used to getting something back out of it. That's what he expected. The guy who dug the hole and hid his in the ground and said, well, here it is. Wipe off a little bit of the mud and stuff, but here it is. And the boss got upset with him. Why? Because he did not use it. He did not exercise it as it was needed. Rather, he took it and socked it away. So, God not only gives us gifts, but the gifts are God expects us to use faithfully for God's purpose. We also find that there, while there may be different functions of gifts within the community of faith, for the most part they have equal status. They have equal status. With the exception of love, love is the greatest of the gifts. But the other gifts are to be used appropriately. But they, one doesn't make you greater than the other person next to you who has a different gift. They function differently. As one writer put it, the gifts of the Spirit are diverse, and they range from the prominent and visible to the routine and ordinary. All, however, are special manifestations of the Spirit for the common good. That which contributes to the wholesome nurturing of faith and the common good is a gift of the Spirit. It says the gifts of the Spirit are diverse, and they range from the prominent and visible, those that are up out front, sometimes in your face, to things that seem routine and ordinary, which oftentimes we kind of write off as not really being important or gifts, and yet they are. All, however, are special manifestations of the Spirit for the common good. That which contributes to the wholesome nurturing of faith. And I think those terms are key. The wholesome nurturing of faith and the common good are gifts of the Spirit. And Paul in 1 Corinthians and in Romans, in both places, says that these gifts are given for the common good. That all good gifts around us are sent from heaven above. Almost sounds like it could be in a song, right? God's spell. But all good gifts around us come from heaven above, so thank the Lord. And use them. And that's one of the ways we thank God. That's one of the expectations, and one of the ways we thank God is not just verbally thanking God, but by using those gifts appropriately, that is thanksgiving. I hesitate to use the word thanksgiving because a lot of times it's overused, but it's living thankfully by using those gifts. Of course, the greatest gift is redemption, and that's given to everybody. We who are being saved receive the great gift of God's grace. By the way, the word for grace in Greek is charis. The word for gift is charisma. The gifts that God gives are grace gifts. We are graced with those gifts, but we are expected by God to use our gifts with grace. Haven't met her, but we're expecting that. We're expected to use God's gifts with the grace that God gives to us. And we're expected to use them within the world. For you see, God enlists us in the creation and the redemption, or the redemptive work of God in the world through the community of faith. We are participants. We are part of God's redemption of the rest of the world. Not only are we a community of faith of the redeemed, or those being redeemed, Paul does say we who are being saved, but we are also to participate by using our gifts, our talents, our capacities with God's grace to help the rest of the world come to a point where they can be redeemed. Start that at home, in your neighborhood, at work, at school, etc. We embrace those gifts after we receive them, but we're expected to be good stewards, and not just good stewards of the gifts for a while, but for life. That is, for all of our lives and for life in the world. Since we are made in the image of God, the Imago Dei, then we need to be even more aware of God's purpose and God's gifts. For you see, we are called to be, first of all, in relationship with God. Find that in Genesis chapter 1 and in chapter 2. God creates humanity, or humankind, to be in relationship, right, with God and with each other. No man is an island. No man walks alone. We are called also to have fruitful work. In chapter 2 of Genesis, verse 15, before God says, "But you can't eat off of this tree, or else." The text says that God made the man and put him in the garden to till it and keep it. That is, productive work, fruitful work, is a part of that relationship with God and the rest of the world. And we're called to be stewards. In Genesis chapter 1, God creates humanity and says, you know, that we're going to have dominion over. But that word for dominion means, it's the same root word in Hebrew as a caretaker. And as we've said before, a caretaker takes care of, still is allowed oftentimes to benefit from, but we must take care of the world. Which also means we must take care of any gifts that God gives us. So you see, spiritual gifts run deep with God's people. So, let me ask a question. What is the difference in a talent and a gift? Talent could be money. Talent, something that can be improved upon. Okay, talent for singing can be. Paige?
A natural ability.
Or what seems to be a natural ability. A talent. Then what's a gift? Yeah. A talent, something occasionally can be learned. That's true. What's really interesting when we talk about talents and gifts is one person may see it as a spiritual gift while another with the same will simply see it as a talent with no spiritual connection whatsoever. So I would suggest that perhaps what we've been talking about, perhaps the difference is in how we see it and how we respond, as whether it's simply a talent, something anybody might have and can improve upon but doesn't have any necessarily any spiritual connection or purpose, or it's a gift, a spiritual gift from God. Going back to, boy, she sure has a real gift for making people feel at ease. She's got that talent as well, but it depends on how you view it and how it's used, perhaps, as to whether it's seen simply as a talent or a gift. Colin Harris writes, "Giftedness is not a collection of abilities, but a way of seeing and responding to our abilities." Giftedness is not a collection of abilities. Rather, it's the way we see and respond to those abilities. Whether we see, bless you, whether we see them as a connection with, through a connection with God, and then feel that privilege to continue to use them because of that relationship with God, or whether we just see them as something that, well, you know, he just happens to be naturally gifted. You know, I lettered in multiple sports in school. Played multiple sports. Started in a lot of positions, and in most games in which I played, regardless of the sport, but I had to work real hard at it. My middle brother Mark just kind of naturally, anything he wanted to do athletically, he could do. When he was a sophomore in high school, he had three universities in North Carolina that were looking at him and talking to him about the possibilities of athletic scholarships when he graduated, and he was a sophomore in high school. Our oldest son, Stephen, is a good athlete, but Stephen always had to work hard at being a good athlete. David, on the other hand, whatever he wanted to do athletically, he just did it. That's just the way it was. I mean, a little bitty, and he'd throw a football with a perfect spiral. Just, you know. So the question is it a talent or a gift? And I think that it really has to do, oftentimes, with how we view it. Not just abilities and a collection of them, but how we see them and respond to them. Because we all have abilities. We all have capacities. Mental, physical, emotional. We all have different capacities and talents, do we not? Or abilities. Some people may be smarter at math. Others at public speaking. Others at teaching. Others at singing. Others at making people feel comfortable. With some folks, there's just no way in the world that even Paula Deen can fix something as good as this person over here, no matter how hard she tries. And they don't even have the recipe written down. They just a pinch of this, a pinch of that, and a dab of this, and it's done. And usually, they're the first dishes that get gone at the church lunches and suppers. Right? Harris goes on to say, rather, the gifted person is the one who has chosen to put on the lenses of faith to look at all of life, including their abilities. Yeah, gifts can be non-spiritual and modify it and say it's a spiritual gift. That's what we're talking about. We are given gifts, and perhaps the way we look at them we don't think, well, that's a spiritual gift. But yet, if it's seen, and as Harris said, if it's seen through the lens of faith and in relationship to God, and then we use it out of thanksgiving to God for that, then it is indeed a spiritual gift, even if it's the gift of being able to cook like nobody else or make people feel welcome when they walk in the door. A gift is something that you would not go out necessarily and decide. A gift is something you don't go out and decide, hey, well, I'm going to get that no matter what. And if it's not truly a gift, you won't be able to really master it and use it, as if the gift is something that has that connection spiritually and is used for a purpose greater than yourself. Oftentimes, a talent is simply used outside of a sense of giftedness. A talent is often used for the good of the person. Whereas the gift is not something you necessarily go out and acquire on your own, but it's something that's been given to you, that ability's been given to you. You play the guitar. You've taught yourself the mandolin. But if you didn't have that ability or that gift to begin with, you wouldn't have been able to do that. Through the lenses of faith and the purpose for which it is used. If we see it as a gift from God and set our course on faithful stewardship of that ability, then It is more a spiritual gift. I guess you could say, you know, we often say beauty's in the eye of the beholder. We could say a gift's in the eye of the beholder.
But a gift that, if you're not gifted, then you still attempt whatever you're trying to do, even though you may do it not nearly as well as something else, you can still be a gift.
Yeah, you're right. You can receive a gift, but and you can try and use it. It may not be as well developed as someone else's. It's still a gift. Yes, if you use it appropriately and you do that, you're gifted with the ability to do something. Once again, part of it is part of the development is how faithful we are in practicing that gift and developing that gift.
But isn't part of being a gift is probably you not knowing that it's really a spiritual gift. When you're doing it, it may be something that you do all the time, and you don't want to say take for granted, but you don't think of it as being a gift or whatever. And everybody else sees it as a gift but you.
Okay.
Those are probably the things that are more, I guess, spiritual gifts versus just a regular gift.
Well, you may have something, you may not see it as a gift, and that's why I said sometime a while ago, sometimes gifts are prominent and visible, and sometimes they just seem routine and ordinary.
Do you have any of those?
My biggest
yeah.
gift is harassment.
Your biggest gift is harassment?
From the front pew or from the back pew?
And so Carrie's biggest gift is harassment. But you know, I mean, no, you're right. You may not see it as a gift, and other people do see it that way. And sometimes when people tell you, you really have a gift for this.
Right.
You just kind of blow it off. And that's where we have to, I think, be more sensitive. And what Paul's saying is being sensitive to that spirit,
right,
giving it. And what we're talking about here is to be sensitive to the possibility of God's presence in that, and use that gift faithfully, develop it, and use it redemptively. To run others down, but use it to help redeem. It certainly is more than simply an ability. It is a spiritual gift. Yeah, and when people say that, you really think so, or we blow it off, or no, you don't. You know. Or we try to have this false sense of humility, and then as soon as we turn around, we forget about it because we don't consider the fact that it might truly be a gift, and that God might be calling us to use that in some way that we haven't thought of, which might make us uncomfortable too. The idea that if we start developing that and using that, God might have us do something with that gift that we're not comfortable doing initially. But, you know, I think probably a lot of folks, and a lot of folks that Paul dealt with spiritual, I'm sure the first time Paul realized spiritual gifts he might have had, he probably wasn't all that comfortable with it. But why don't we use them? And why don't we see them that way? Because, as Carrie mentioned, it may seem rote or routine. It might seem ordinary. But in somebody else's eye, somebody else's perspective, it's not. And we don't see it as that important because it's something we're just used to doing kind of almost second nature.
Yeah, of course I missed that. One of the first things you said when you started, one gift is each of us might have. Is that ability to affirm someone else,
right,
that they may or may not.
Right. That affirmation of other people's gifts is in itself a gift. To be affirming rather than criticizing. To have the courage to step up and affirm instead of just kind of sitting in the back and saying, well, you know, one of these days they'll figure it out. Kind of thing. But why don't people use those gifts? Well, we don't. First of all, we don't see them as gifts. We just see them as something we do. Sometimes people say, "Well, you know, we don't. I don't use my gifts, or I don't have any gifts to use, or you know, I've got certain talents, but you know, I'm just too busy." especially these days, people, and kind of trying to figure out here, okay, if we're called, if we're given gifts, then why don't we use them? Well, sometimes we don't recognize them because they're routine or seem routine, and we need to have put on that lens of faith, as Harris mentioned a while ago, looking at what we do through the lens of faith and trying to figure out, is this truly something that is a spiritual gift? Is this something from God that I can use, not just to put food on the table or to protect my family, but is it something that I can use also or can be used also to help other people in the community, and the community of faith, and beyond? So busy schedules, but what kind of activities do you enjoy doing? Think about questions. You know, what are things that you enjoy doing? What are things that maybe you enjoy doing that seem routine or ordinary, but you seem to have a knack or an ability for doing that? What forms of service bring you joy? Is there some way that you can use that talent or gift that should help bring you some sense of joy or accomplishment? Some people don't use their talents or their gifts because what's a big question? What's one of the big questions folks ask today when somebody says, will you do such and such, or will you invest in such and such, whether it's time, money, or whatever? Our big question is, what's in it for me? What reward am I going to get?
Sometimes there's fear.
Well, sometimes there is fear. We're afraid to step out and do it because we're not used to doing that kind of thing. We're afraid how somebody may react. We're afraid somebody may laugh at us. We're afraid somebody may cuss us out. We're afraid somebody might do even more. They might become so upset they physically accost us. But, you know, oftentimes we think... There are a lot of people out there. I've run into some before. There are a lot of people out there who think, well, you know, I might have a particular gift or a talent, but, you know, what's in it for me? If I offer it at church, what am I going to get in return? I get paid for it out yonder. If I use it here, what am I going to get in return?
I think the person, and that's what you're talking about,
positive feedback does help with encouraging. And a lot of times, unfortunately, a lot of times people in the church have not really been good at giving positive feedback. Yeah, it does. But, you know, we think, well, you know, I do this. Why do I want to do that from church? What's in it for me? What kind of reward am I going to get? Of course, think about who you're talking about, too. The one behind the church. And who knows? You just might see a child's face light up because of something you said or did. Or you might see an older child that's older than you face light up. Or you might see a tear come down somebody's cheek and that was the word they needed or the action that they needed right at that point in time. How can we put a price on reward for the use of a gift? Some can be. Some talents can seem to be genetic. And yet, even those kinds of talents, if viewed in the proper way, could be seen as a gift that has been passed on to be used for a particular reason and a particular purpose. Even to the point of maybe looking back and saying, well, you know, so-and-so in my family seemed to have that same talent, but they squandered it. I'm going to do something more with it. Sometimes we really don't recognize the need of our gift or our talent in the church or in the neighborhood. But if we look and seek to find a sense of balance within our lives, we may find that place within the church that we can be useful. 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verses 4 through 6 says, there are varieties of gifts, but the same Spirit. There are varieties of service, but the same Lord. And there are varieties of work, but it is the same God who inspires them all in every one. We are a diverse body. We have different gifts and different abilities. And yet, if we connect those with God, and if we connect those with that calling that God has placed upon us, to use those things which God gives to us, not just for our good, but to use them in connection with God and with our relationship with God and other Christians, relying on each other. You might say, oh, well, mine's just such a small gift. Yeah, but small connected with another small, connected with another seemingly small, connected with another one, the cumulative effect of all of that together in fellowship with God and in covenant with God and with each other. They can help us not only discover really what our gifts are, but can help us nurture those gifts and use those gifts for the common good. For the common good. It's 12:2. Next Sunday night we will not be here because it's Mother's Day. We won't have evening service, but we will continue the following Sunday night on the 16th. No, but I did have somebody ask. All these people have these bumper stickers that say, "Say in case of rapture, this car will be unmanned." But you know, if you look at the one place rapturo is used, the word rapture is used, and it's in the not in the Greek text, but it's in the Latin Vulgate in 1 Thessalonians chapter 4, when Paul says that when Christ returns, the dead in Christ will rise first, and then we who are alive will be caught up into the air to meet with Him, and so we will be with Him. But what's He coming to the earth for? He's coming to the earth to reign, which means we're going to be coming back down here. Instead of going on, then maybe that car being emptied is not necessarily the folks that are going up, but the other folks. Just perspective. Perspective. God bless you. Find your gift. Cultivate your gift. And use those gifts together for the good of our fellowship here and the improvement of the world at large. God bless you. Go in peace. Amen.